gathered, we're ready to move forward with argument. Ms. Frith, we're ready when you are, and if you would like to reserve some time for rebuttal, please let me know how much time.
All right. How about if I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
3 minutes, yes, ma'am.
All right. All right, may it please the court, my name is Linda Frith, and I represent the appellants in this appeal, to whom I will refer to, collectively as the employer. This claim arises out of a work injury occurring on December 16, 2013, involving the claimant, who was 24 years old at the time and is now 26. There are a number of issues argued on appeal to this court, but for this oral argument, I'm going to primarily focus on one issue, which involves a case of first impression for this court. And that issue is whether the Commission's retroactive application of the 2014 amendment to Virginia Code Section 65.2705D, which allows for two deputy commissioners or two retired commissioners up to hear a case on review, whether by allowing that application of that amendment in 2014 to our case, whether that impaired the vested substantive right of the employer as provided in 65.2201E to have at least two full commissioners sit on the review panel. And,
this is Judge Humphreys. Can I ask you about that? In terms of a matter of first impression, we have a lot of case law out there that essentially stands for the proposition that when you have a change in the law that's procedural in nature, it's effective as to any procedure that occurs. In other words, any hearing, trial, whatever it might be. Whereas if there's a substantive change in the law, it's effective as to all events that occur after the effective change in the law. Why isn't this a purely procedural issue, since it only involves who can preside or who can make a decision regarding the outcome of a hearing?
Well, we cited some cases in our brief. When a procedural change affects a substantive right afforded in another statute, then it should not relate back. It should only relate forward and be prospective.
Well, what's the substantive right here? Maybe I'm misunderstanding
okay.
that.
Yeah, the substantive
so
right.
You're certainly getting a hearing, are you not?
Well, the substantive right that was affected in our case is our right to have two full commissioners sit on the review panel. And in Section 65.2201E, it defines what is considered a quorum for the full commission for the purposes of judicial function. And in that statute, it says it has to be two or more full commissioners need to sit on the review panel. And at the time of this accident in 2013, they had not amended the statute yet even to allow the two deputy commissioners or two retired full commissioners. So
Ms.
at the
Frith,
time...
Ms. Frith, this is Judge Alston, and to follow up on Judge Humphrey's question, and I think I'm trying to make it a little, I'm dumbing it down a little bit for me, what is the difference, how would you define the difference between a substantive right and a procedural right? Because I think we all agree that the case will turn on whether or not it is a substantive right or a procedural right. Why do you believe this is a substantive right?
Because it resulted in prejudicial error to our client, and the substantive right that vested at the time was to have a quorum. And the quorum, that's not just procedural. That is, as we argue in our brief, it's in the commission under Section 200. It's pointed out in Section D that the commission shall be comprised of one person on the full commission who's designated as the employer rep, one person who's designated as the employee rep, and one who's commonly known as the neutral representative. And that's important in workers' comp cases because the appointment of the commissioners is more political than the normal judicial appointment. And in our case, we ended up being deprived of having a quorum of at least two commissioners with differing backgrounds and viewpoints. I ended up with just one commissioner who was the commissioner who is the employee rep, who in fact decided the interlocutory appeal of the exact same issue. In his dissent, he prepared a 7-page dissent on the interlocutory appeal. I ended up back before just him. He was the only person then of a commissioner that sat on the review panel and wrote the decision and decided the case with just two deputy commissioners. And as we point out in our brief, deputy commissioners, they are deputized by the commission. And in this case, the employee representative was, he was the chair of the commission. And so he wrote the initial dissent, and then it came back to him for the decision. And in that case, you know, it greatly prejudiced us because the full commission enters the interlocutory opinion with Commissioner Williams writing the majority opinion, finding probable cause existed. And in that decision, he even noted in dicta that he did not find the treating physician's reversal of his opinion that the FCE was warranted to be persuasive. Then Commissioner Marshall, the employee representative, wrote a 7-page dissent, finding that probable cause did not even exist to refer the case to the hearing docket as to whether the claimant...
Judge Humphreys again. You're absolutely correct that when they're appointed, the commissioners are appointed to represent particular interest groups. But when they put on their judicial hats and act as judges, they're supposed to set all that aside. They're bound by the canons of judicial conduct, just as we are. And so I guess a little trouble when you keep referring to them. If the commissioners did nothing but rule in favor of their constituencies, every single decision would be 2-1 with the neutral commissioner resolving the conflict. So, I mean, clearly the commission doesn't necessarily act in the interests of their constituency when they're wearing their hats as judges and trying to resolve issues of whether someone whether a claimant should be compensated for an injury or not. It seems to me those constituent interests are only in play when it comes to the policy-making role the commission has.
Well, you know, one thing you just noted is that the commissioners are bound by the canons of judicial ethics. Deputy commissioners are not bound by the canons of judicial ethics. I had two of my review hearing, my panel, I had two of the three members that weren't bound by the canons of judicial ethics. And in 65.2201E, a quorum for the full commission to decide cases has to be comprised of two full commissioners. And with the commission, it is a bit unusual, and I have to agree. It's different than with state or federal appellate courts. In 200D, it's pointed out one of the commissioners comes from the employee background, one comes from the employer background, and one is neutral. And while it is true they don't always decide cases favorable to the employee, if they're employee rep or the employer, if they're employer rep, history, my experience is they tend to lean one way or the other. And some of that is just natural, but it happens.
Would you agree or disagree that a judge pro tem is bound by the canons of judicial ethics?
When you say a judge pro tem, what do you mean by that?
A judge who is appointed by another judge to hear a certain matter.
I do not believe the deputy commissioners are. And that's always been my understanding that they aren't.
But isn't a deputy commissioner, when he or she is sitting in this particular context, sitting as a commissioner?
I don't believe that. I don't believe that's the case.
Ms. Frith, if you could, point me to something that would help to give me, as far as not applying it specifically to the facts of your case, how we can make a determination as to whether something is a substantive right or a procedural right?
I think when it just it just is directed to just a procedure itself, it doesn't affect a substantial right of a party that has vested. And in this case, we had a very substantial right that was affected in this case, and that is to have more than just one commissioner with one viewpoint hear the case. And in my case, I ended up with one commissioner, and because of the procedural facts of my case, I essentially lost that appeal before I got started. And the reason I say that is the one commissioner, the employee rep, the only one to sit on the review panel, had earlier written a 7-page dissent on the exact same issue that came back on appeal, and he was the only one to hear it.
Let me ask you this, Ms. Frith. Suppose the legislature, in its wisdom, decided to decrease the number of commissioners on the State Corporation Commission, and something came before the State Corporation Commission after the legislature decreased the number of people who sat on that commission. Would this also be considered a substantive right, and we would have to find other commissioners to hear cases that were in the pipeline during that time?
Well, I don't know how state corporation commissioners are appointed, but I do know with an employee rep, both different sides. In other words, I don't know that. I know in the commission under 200D, you have one that's an employee rep, one's an employer rep, and one's a neutral. I'm not familiar with the State Corporation Commission and how it is set up, and if it's as much of a...
Ms. Frith, do I understand your answer to Judge Austin's question then to be basically because the commission is set up with these various constituencies represented, that you have a right to be heard by a commissioner who in effect has a built-in bias either for or against you?
I think if Commissioner O'Neill, the neutral, had sat on this panel, we wouldn't have an argument at all, because we would have at least two.
Your argument is your substantive right that was prejudiced here is your right to have a biased commissioner in your favor. Is that it?
No, it's to not have just one commissioner who clearly was biased against our position, to have at least two to hear the case, which is what the General Assembly intended.
Suppose one commissioner was ill and couldn't sit, and it happened to be the commissioner that favors the employer, your client.
And so the only remaining
commissioners would be the neutral and the pro-employee commissioners. Would your argument be the same?
As long as two from any interest, and it wouldn't have to be the employer. It could be the employee and the neutral, but as long as you have at least two, I wouldn't have an argument at all.
Ms. Frith, you're at your three-minute rebuttal. You're free to continue if you want, but just wanted to let you know you're
okay,
there.
Okay, thank you. I'll hold for my rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Webb?
Good afternoon to the panel. My name is Dale Webb, and I am representing the appellee, Mr. Lester. On a couple of issues, I just want to make sure we separate out what is before this court. The first issue basically is the issue of whether Mr. Lester unjustifiably refused a functional capacity evaluation. And that, so the panel understands, that went up to the full commission and whether that could be docketed. And the opinion that Ms. Frith is arguing about, the panel found that, yes, that application should be docketed. In that case, Deputy Commissioner Tabb was one of the deputy commissioners who sat on that review panel at that time. There was no objection by Ms. Frith to that. And Deputy Commissioner Tabb actually found against the claimant and sent the case to the hearing docket to be heard. The standard, though, before the deputy commissioner was whether Mr. Lester willfully and consciously refused the FCE. and the Deputy Commissioner Himmel in this case rendered an opinion and said that was not the case, that there was a treating physician who told him not to go. He followed that advice, and the evidence did not support that willful, conscious refusal to support an unjustified refusal of the FCE. And Mr. Lester has been without benefits.
Judge Austin, I respect your argument, but essentially most of that argument is a standard of review assessment by this court. As you might have been able to tell from the questions from both Judge Humphreys and me, the core issue in this case, I believe, relates to whether or not there is a substantive right or a procedural right that your opponent colleague holds because of the structure of the Workers' Compensation Commission. And if I understood her argument, and I'm sure she'll correct me if I'm wrong, is that she's basically saying that it was fundamentally unfair for there to be not to be a representative of the employer interest on the panel, and because of the unusual structure of the Workers' Compensation Commission, that made it a substantive right. Therefore, the panel was not constituted properly. What would be your argument to that?
Yes, thank you, Judge. And on that issue, and I was just getting ready to say, when it went back up, the same Deputy Commissioner Tabb, who had ruled against the claim, was on that panel. So to argue somehow this panel was not fair is simply untrue, because that Deputy Commissioner ruled against the claimant initially, and then at the review stage, after the hearing, found for the claimant. So if anyone should have a problem with the panel, would have been the claimant. We did not object, and there was no reason to object. And because the statute allowed the panel, the commission, to do exactly what they did. And I would point out on the issue whether it's procedural versus substantive, the following, Judge. Case Lane versus Crist Electric, which was before this court December 70, 2013, specifically said that Section 65.2-705 established a procedure by which the commission could basically provide assistance where one of the full commissioners was absent. That was in 2012, and it did address the 2012 amendment. And I'd point out that that accident in that case, in the Lane case, was before the amendment. There was no that was retroactive. The procedure applied even though the accident was before the procedural change.
Mr. Webb, wouldn't you agree that most of the time when we're dealing with the interpretation of a regulation or a statute, that if the legislature intended for it to be applied retroactively, it would say that in the administrative procedure or the statute itself?
Well, I think there are a number of rules of construction, Your Honor, that have to be reviewed here. The other rule would be that a court may not adopt the construction of the statute that would amount to holding the legislature did not mean what it actually expressed. And so when you look at Section 65.2705D, when the amendment took place, and the second amendment took place in 2014, the legislature was very clear that it gave the chairman the right, in the case of an absence, in order to run the commission properly, to handle the cases that come before them. When these absences happen, they're going to allow the commissioner basically to appoint up to two deputy commissioners to sit at that time. And so I think for this court to interpret that statute and that amendment, there's no other way to do it. I think the full commissioner in this case, in their opinion, interpreted, and they looked at specifically what the claimant argued in reference to the quorum and found that there was no inconsistency, that there were three, not two. So there were three people hearing this case. The statute clearly allowed the chairman, in the case of absence, which they found happened, to appoint the two deputy commissioners. It was a procedural change that was allowed to occur. I'd also point out, Your Honor, that in Section D of 705, it references how this will take place, that the retired member or members recalled shall be the member or members who occupy the seat for which such member or members are being recalled. So it contemplated that that person would be sitting in the stead of the absent full commissioner, and it gave full authority to the commission to do that. And, you know, this is not, and I also want to point out to the court, this is not something new. This is, Yeah, I've been practicing working with the commission since 1986. The full commission, in their opinion, actually put in a footnote, number 3, cases dating back to 1997, where they did exactly the same thing. This has been going on almost 20 years, where the full commission has had the opportunity and need to handle their operations, to appoint deputy commissioners setting the full commission. So, Ms. Freeland,
you would agree that as far as this case is concerned, this is a matter of first impression.
I don't know that I agree with that. I think that there are a number of cases that are cited by the full commission that two deputy commissioners have been heard. I guess I would agree that perhaps this is the first time someone has made an issue. I don't know that there's a case where this specifically, other than the Lane case, that basically said this is procedural. The full commission is given the right by statute to, and they're animals of legislation. They can only act with what the statute says. But in this case, the legislature contemplated that they would allow them to do this, specifically put in the statute. And I think for this court to interpret that statute in accordance with the rules of construction would require this court to find that they did have the authority to do that.
One other question, and then I'll be quiet for a while. And I'm not suggesting that this is necessarily what occurred in this case, but the danger, for lack of a better word, to come up with is that if we have a commissioner, a chairman, that happens to be the pro-employer or pro-employee chairman, doesn't he, if we apply this thing retroactively, basically have the ability to stack the deck?
Well, I think the court asked some pretty good questions earlier, is that, you know, we have got great full commissioners. We've got great deputy commissioners. Now, they are all honored by the rules of canon and their acts when they're sitting. I think to somehow presume that these individuals are in favor of one position or another, I think the court's correct. We'd have a 2-to-1 opinion in every case. We don't have that because they are sitting. In this case, it was a unanimous opinion. So I don't think the deck was stacked. In fact, again, Deputy Commissioner Tabb had ruled against the claimant initially. And then after, with the standard here was a willful, conscious disregard, and that simply was not met. There was no evidence of that. And so this was a fairly simple case for the full commission to decide on that issue. There was simply no evidence the claimant willfully refused to go to the FCE. And that's all I have for the court, unless there's any additional questions.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Hearing none, we thank you very much. Ms. Rick, you have probably 3 minutes remaining. Ms. Riff?
I think we lost her.
I think so.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't hear anybody geek out.
Okay.
I apologize. Yes, I believe this is a case of first impression, and there is no case that we were able to find that dealt with the issue of whether the quorum requirement of 65.2201E is satisfied when you only have one full commissioner. Height Construction versus Pratt, Lane versus Crist, both of those cases involve two commissioners sitting on the review panel, unlike what we have here. One of you just asked about, well, wouldn't this create an opportunity for a full commissioner to possibly stack the deck, depending on whether he's an employer rep or employee rep? I don't know what happened in this case, but I do know, and I'd like to point out, this is not in our brief, that in our motion for reconsideration, we argued why was it so necessary to get the opinion out when Commissioner Williams, the employer rep, was coming back in a couple of weeks. And we point out that he sat on a review panel and an opinion was issued by him or with him as part of the panel, and that was issued on March 29, 2016, which means he had to have been back at work probably sometime early March, and this opinion was issued on Friday, February 19th, 2016. So, you know, a couple, 2 to 3 week delay, we would have had at least one other commissioner hear the case. Now, also, there was a question about whether it would have been satisfied, the quorum requirement, if the neutral rep had heard the case along with the employee rep. And yes, it would. If Commissioner O'Neill had sat on the review panel, then the quorum requirement would have been met, and we would have had at least two different interests hearing the case, the neutral and the employee rep. But we didn't have that. All we had was the employee rep. And I would point out that Commissioner O'Neill, his appointment expired on January 31st, 2016. The opinion is issued on February 19th, 2016, a Friday. The next business day, Monday, February 22nd, 2016, Commissioner Newman is reappointed, retroactive to February 1st, 2016. I don't know why he did not sit on the panel, but the timing is certainly coincidental. So in my case, I end up with just the one full commissioner hearing the case, the employee rep, and the commissioner that wrote the seven-page dissent, a very strong dissent, saying he wouldn't even find probable cause to refer the employer's application alleging unjustified refusal to attend an FCE to the docket. And then I end up before him, and he's the only commissioner writing the decision. And as we said in our brief, we feel like we had lost before we got started on that appeal. And also I'd like to point out, deputy commissioners are hired and fired by the full commissioners. We, as we point out in our brief, did an exhaustive review of every case decided or issued by the commission while Commissioner Williams was out and didn't find one dissent authored by a deputy commissioner. And it would be difficult to do if your boss is, authoring the opinion one way. It would be difficult for you to write a dissent, and you won't find those. It's very, very unusual, and we didn't find any recent ones while Commissioner Williams was out. And as a result, we believe that the retroactive application of 705D in 2014 amendment in our case impaired a vested substantive right of the employer to have at least two deputy commissioners decide the appeals. And I'd also like to point out that the failure of the commission to have at least two commissioners decide the case deprived the commission of authority to exercise its subject matter jurisdiction, since the panel that decided it was not legally constituted as required by 65.2201E. The employer, we filed timely objection, and therefore we ask this court to render the full commission opinions of February 19, 2016 and March 16, 2016 void.
Thank you very much, Ms. Frith. That, your 15 minutes has expired. We thank both of you for the arguments. This has been most helpful. The case is submitted, and the court will now adjourn and go into conference. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.